my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 388 to be broadcast March 27th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She is doing Dr. Fran Storch stuff this morning, and I'm a day late, so I'm one day delayed on my delivery. A couple of reasons why we won't get into, well, actually we may get into it in the show, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information, you can either comment down here below if you're listening on Facebook Live, or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Here it comes, folks. Here it comes. The moment we have all not been waiting for. Heart medication and frustration that I'm feeling right now. Yeah, right. I rode my bicycle 1.4 miles on Sunday in the Natchog Epic with my intention to do a 35-mile complete gravel ride. And I could not get my legs to respond. There was severe pain. There was all sorts of issues going on that I've been fighting with for a number of weeks. I thought I was through this. And unfortunately, it's a bummer because it was the Natchog Epic, and I've been talking about it and promoting it for the last, you know, for a number of months now. And I was really, really looking forward to doing that and also helping out my friend Richard Freeze. Shout out to Richard on just an amazing event, just an incredible event. But anyway, so here it is. Here's a classic medical world conclusion on this. Statins and cholesterol-altering drugs may increase the incidence of exercise-related muscular complaints, and in some studies, augment the exercise-induced rise in muscle enzymes, but statins do not consistently reduce muscle strength, endurance, overall exercise performance, or physical activity. You know what I gotta say? Bull. That's it. I can't say the last word because I'm on public radio and I'm not allowed to say that, but you know where it's going. It's really frustrating. I am going to talk about it a bit on the show today, so be prepared. Remember that I am not here to offer medical advice. I am just giving you experience. That's all I'm giving you, and we'll talk further, and I am also currently speaking with my cardiologist about this, so we're going to get to the bottom of it, but I need to get to the bottom of it because I really like to ride my bike, and I would really like to not feel disabled when I get on my bike. Another story for another time. Anyway, this and more in the show. On a positive side, the Natchog Epic was this weekend. I've been talking about it for months. I've been pushing it on the show for months. I help at that particular event. I'm usually the sweep on the express ride, which I was fully intending to do this year, but unfortunately things turned different, so I ended up doing it in my car. I ended up doing a sag sweep just in case anybody needed a ride or needed to deposit clothing or whatever. I just followed them along and met them at different places, and we did it that way, and it was still, so I still spent time with those folks, but it wasn't really the time I wanted to spend with them. So anyway, more epic than normal? Yeah, I would say so. So here's the story. Here's what happened. The Natchog Epic was, the day before the Epic, there was supposed to be a recon ride. Recon ride got canceled. The rain was just solid. It was coming down really hard. And by the time it was all over, there were somewhere between 3 and 4 inches of rain that had dropped in a day. That's more rain than most places get in a year, and we got it in that one day, and so therefore the Epic was more epic than normal. Absolutely. So what a day. just so you understand, the the conditions were so bad that the very first segmented piece on the ride for all folks was neutralized, because there was a foot of water to get to that area that the first segment was. So therefore, because safety was a concern and liability and all the other fun stuff that goes along with putting on events, God, I love putting on events. Anyway, because of all that, we had to make an alteration in the event. So the first area of concern was neutralized. It was the classic Cuisinator, which has always been a very, very epic part of this whole event. And so that had to be taken out, but there's a really good reason. It was just a mess. When you get that much water dumping down, it really changes everything around it and around you. And now, needless to say, it had sunny the day of the event. The sun came out. It was really kind of nice. That part was really good. But it had dropped down to 22 degrees that night before. There were ice patches everywhere. And even when I was driving over in the morning to go work the event, I was on the road at 5:30 in the morning, and there were huge patches of black ice on the roads that were, it would come up by surprise because it's just water rushing across the road, and then it froze because it was 22 degrees out. So, it was a little sketchy. So the decision was made to push the event up by 1 hour. So, if you had a 9 o'clock start, it was a 10 o'clock start, et cetera, on down the line until the final ride went off, which was at noon. At noon, it had reached, I believe, because that was the ride that I was planning on participating on, I think it had reached 37 degrees at that point. Still not warm. Still pretty chilly. Definitely chillier than old Peddlin' Ron likes to pedal in. And, I was prepared for it. I put my bar mitts on my bike because I hate cold hands. And, wrapped up my feet as best I could with booties and all that and just hope for the best. Plus, I carried, and this is something you might want to realize if you're ever doing an event like this, I took an extra pair of socks with me, which I put in a Ziploc bag and then put in my back pocket. So now I've got this, nice dry pair of socks. So when the feet got too uncomfortable from being submerged too many times, and believe me, the people were just covered. It was a wet, wet ride. And not because it was raining, because of what had happened the day before. But anyway, so that's a good little tip, which, I could have put that into my mechanical minute and tip of the week. But anyway, I did not, and now you got it early. In a statement this week, let's add on to this. People for Bikes said it had planned to develop a comprehensive comment in support of reasonable regulatory standards for electric bikes. The organization's goals include resolving the various open issues around this technology, ensuring that safe and high-quality products made by our members can continue to be sold, in harmonizing these new U.S. regulations and global standards. So there's a plan out there with the whole e-bike controversy. I went to a town meeting last night here in my town, where we Bike Mansfield, which is a local organization that is an advocacy organization that is trying to do better things for the town. I hope that your town has something like that. And if it doesn't, I hope that you might consider starting something like that, because it's a really, really good thing. You communicate a little bit more with the powers that be. And, we went up in front of the Board of Selectmen last night and the mayor and my friend Lon Hultgren. Big shout out to Lon for all the effort he has put into this. We started on this. I remember sitting in a little tiny conference room at the town hall probably 10 years ago, starting the building blocks of getting this going and also getting the town to be a league of American bicyclists, you know, bicycle-friendly town, which we are now. And we have these little signs at the town lines that say bicycle-friendly community, which is kind of cool. And, you know, we're always looking at better ways to make cycling and pedestrian activity safer in our town. So last night, after putting this proposal out to the town council and letting them mill over it and read about it and make their decisions, it was unanimously approved to go forward with what we had proposed. So that's a good thing, because we've got some, we live in a town with a very large college campus with a very weak infrastructure, which is also being developed right now, by the way. And so we're heading in the right direction. So that's the UConn campus. Go Huskies, by the way, if you haven't been watching any basketball. I know I'm a basketball nut. What can I say? I live in the basketball capital of the world. I can't avoid it. It's just really fun and it's infectious. Beside the point, both the men's and the women's teams are in the Sweet 16 at this time. So yay. Anyway, so we'll talk a little bit more about some of this in the show. And Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips: what do you do when your derailleur snaps on your mountain or gravel bike and you're in the middle of an event? Yeah. Why do I bring this up? Because I have a friend who ran into that problem at the Natchog Epic. And of course, immediately he started diving into trying to fix the bike. And it's funny, because the guy that was with him was like, you know, almost relieved, because they were so whipped at that point. It was just, I don't know if you've ever spent a long period of time riding through really mucky, you know, wet, just, I call it wattage sucking conditions. And as Bill said, it was like riding in beach sand. He said, I felt like I was riding my bike at the beach, because it was just that hard. It was really, really hard in places. Well, he snapped his rear derailleur, and the next thing you do is, what do? You know, you snap your rear derailleur. Rear derailleur's no good anymore. So we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do when your derailleur snaps on your mountain or gravel bike. And hey, you know, you ever get stranded on a bike ride to have to resort to MacGyvering your bike? Leave me some comments. I'd love to hear about that. That's I've done it with a lot of people. With I think I started the MacGyver technique back when I was riding my bicycle across the country when I was 20 years old, and I broke enough spokes that I had a problem, and I had to kind of take two broken spokes and, you know, twist them together to make one spoke out of it to be able to get myself going forward until I got to a bike shop. So there's a lot of little things you could do MacGyver-wise, and, you know, you can get yourself through. But we're going to talk a little bit about what you do when you break that darn chain, or when you break the derailleur, or you snap the hanger off, or, oh God, there's just so many things that can happen when you're out riding your bike, and especially if you're riding on a mountain or a gravel bike, because chances are you're off-road, and chances are that you might pick up a stick, and if you pick up a stick and it somehow gets wedged between your derailleur and also your rear wheel, the problem is, you know, stick in the spokes. And do I need to say more? If you put a stick in the spoke in the front wheel, guess what happens? You go over the top, right? If you put it in the rear wheel, you snap the derailleur off. So, or you clean out a whole bunch of spokes, and that turns into a yet another nightmare. So the industry, years ago, when mountain bikes became popular, and there was a decision made that we need to figure out a way around this, because we're replacing too many frames because of damage to the frame, and there's got to be a better way. They came out with this wonderful thing called the removable derailleur hanger. And the removable derailleur hanger is generally made out of aluminum, a softer material, and one that will fatigue at a much quicker level than the old steel hangers that were welded onto the frame. So anyway, they're called breakaway hangers. And the way they work is if you do run into one of these points where you do put a stick in, hopefully, chances are the hanger will break before the derailleur completely bends into the rear wheel of the bike, which will keep you from having an even larger expense. So my recommendation is for anybody who's spending a lot of time off-road, maybe you're doing a bunch of gravel rides, maybe you're doing, mountain bike, if you're riding your mountain bike a lot, you really should keep a spare hanger in your little seat bag. It's like super important. Yeah, it seems like a silly thing to have to buy when you don't need it, but it won't be when you do need it. So there is the possibility of being able to replace the hanger in this situation. But sometimes the hanger situation doesn't turn out to be as positive as just a broken hanger or a bent hanger. It turns into I got to do something more drastic than that. And then the other thing is, if you try to bend back one of these hangers, they'll usually snap on you. So they don't really like a lot of stressing back and forth before they give in. If you would like a recommendation as to what hanger to get, you go back to your local bike shop, and they'll usually, the manufacturer of that bike will have a hanger available for you. My recommendation is to not use that hanger, but go to Wheels Manufacturing and get the best hangers in the industry. They're very good. They've got so many aftermarket hangers, and rant out to the bicycle industry for not using a standard here. Anyway, I said it. I complained about it for years. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different style hangers for all the different bikes that are out there. What a bad idea. Whose idea was that? Stupid, stupid, stupid. But anyway, we'll venture on upon that. So get yourself a hanger. If you don't have a hanger yet, get yourself a hanger. I even have extra hangers for my road bikes because you just never know. You just don't. So, if you're in a situation where you need to have a replaceable hanger on your bike, fortunately, I own a number of steel bikes, which don't require that. But then that's, grouchy old Ron talking. I like steel bikes. I like them a lot. I was riding one the other day. It was great. It's just steel is real. Anyway, highly opinionated. That's what you get here. The breakaway hangers are, it's just a good investment. It's a really good investment. It'll get you home, which is really good. But let's talk about the other way to get your home. And the other way is, and then I also highly encourage this, you should be keeping a couple of what they call snap links or master links, I guess is what they used to call them years and years ago, replaceable links in your seat bag. And if you have, you just got to remember that whether your chain is a 9-speed, a 10-speed, or 11-speed chain, or whatever it is, you have to have the link to match that. A lot of them are made by KMC or SRAM, or I don't think Shimano does that still. They're still into the old pin method, last I knew, which is not great. I'm not a big believer in that one, replacing a pin. And that's kind of a one-shot deal, and the master links are easy to do. The only difficulty that you may have with them is when you do need to, let's say you trash your rear derailleur and now you need to make, you need to figure out how to get home. So let's go back to how you get home first. So you need to get home. So you need to somehow modify your bike into a mid-range gear that will be make your bike into basically a single speed. And you can't use the front and rear derailleur anymore, so you're gonna because if you use the front derailleur, you're not gonna have enough chain to do it. So you're gonna have to decide which gear it is that you think you can get home with. And I've done it, and I can give you an experience on that. And it's not the best way to do it, but you can do it. So that's what it is. Anyway, I'll go back to my story there in a little bit. So anyway, you're trying to basically make your bike into a one-speed. Now, most of the bikes that are out there, this gets a little bit more difficult because most of the bikes out there have what they call vertical dropouts. And vertical dropout is an up-and-down dropout. It is the newer way of building frames, and a lot of companies do it. It's really easy to drop the wheel out because of that, because it just drops straight down, and it's an efficiency thing, and I think that's part of the reason why that was done. What the problem is here is that you are stuck with one chain tension and only one chain tension. So you have to very carefully measure out your chain as to how long it can be in the gear, the one that you have chosen to ride your bike back home. Sometimes the gear is too big, sometimes the gear is too low, but at least you can pedal the bike, so that's not such a bad thing. So you anyway, you then need to have a chain breaker with you. So one of those small multi-tools with a good chain breaker on it makes another lovely thing to keep in your seat pack and carry with you, because if you get in trouble, you can actually take a few links out of the old chain, which you're going to have to take a lot of links out if it was a derailleur bike, and then reconnect the chain, and you reconnect the chain by using this little smart link. If you already have a smart link or a quick link on your bike, you'll probably want to take the chain apart at that point. This is where it gets a little tricky, because if you don't have a pair of like needle nose pliers or the specific tool that our good friends at Park Tool and others make, you are not going to get that chain apart super easily. It really becomes wedged out and together, and which is good because it doesn't fall apart while you're riding your bike, but it can be sometimes difficult to remove. If you have one of those tools, it's they're pliers of their own type, and it just makes the job really, really, really effortless. So maybe that's another tool that you might want to carry in your seat bag. I know we're getting heavy on the seat bag right now, but you know, it's only the time that you don't have it that you'll wish you had it. And so, you know, it definitely is a good thing for you to do. So anyway, you then put your chain back together again at that pre-measured distance is going to give you a single speed. There are some issues that can happen with this, but for the most part, if you put it in a mid-range gear so the chain is not straining to reach itself up to the next cog, because all the cogs are now beveled to the point where they'll help assist the shifting of the bike. You don't want it to shift if it's in one gear. You don't want it to do that. So it does get a little dicey there, and you just got to figure out, you know, what's going to work best for you. So anyway, then now you got a single speed, and you can ride your bike out of the woods, out to a road, catch a ride, do whatever, you know, whatever you need to do. These guys, fortunately, someone had seen that they were having a problem and reported it to one of the people that was involved with the ride. And before you know it, a pickup truck came along and said, "You guys need a hand." And they took the ride because they were cooked, because, you know, it's like you've been riding in sludge all day long, or peanut butter or molasses or whatever you want to call it. But it was a really difficult ride. I saw some pretty tired people coming in at the finish line. It was kind of amazing. So anyway, they took the ride. But so what happens if you do get your bike fixed? Okay, here's my situation. Now I'm going to go back to that situation that I had. And my situation was that we were on a group bike ride on the road, all right? And someone who was not paying attention very closely behind me. He was a brand new rider on our group ride, and he was not paying really close attention. He ran into the back of my bike. And where did he run into my bike? Right behind the rear derailleur. And when he did, he then tipped over. And when he tipped over, he essentially snapped my derailleur off my bike. So everybody's kind of looking and going, oh boy, what are we going to do? What, you know, we're 20 miles from home from where we had started, so we got a ways to go. And I had a chain tool, and I took the chain tool and I made it into a single speed, and I reconnected it with a quick link, and now I had a one speed. And everybody's going, oh, how are you going to? I said, look, I'm not going to be able to keep up with you, but I know where I am. And I know a couple little ways I can shortcut my way back. You guys go ahead, finish the ride, do what you have to do. Don't worry about me. I know where I am. And, you know, if somebody gets back early, you can come and pick me up. But, you know, this is essentially what we got to do. Don't ruin the ride. So I sent them on their way, and I rode with them for a little bit of that because I knew where I was going to do my cutoff part. And of course, I was having trouble with the bevels on the cassette on the back, which were lifting the chain whenever I would in any way wiggle or weave the bike or get out of the saddle. I was stuck. It would try to automatically shift, and then I would have to come to an abrupt stop and reconnect the chain back onto the cog that it was supposed to be on. So it can be tricky. Because it never wants to shift down. It always wants to shift up. It always wants to shift up to an easier gear. That's why they bevel the cogs on the cassettes. And if you look really closely at your bike, you'll be able to see this sort of thing. And you'll see how it all works. So it was truly an issue. And so I had to stop multiple times. I ended up sending them on their way. And I knew a way of cutting across the actual route we were doing on some other back roads, which required a lot of steep hill climbing, which required me to be inclined to get out of the saddle, but I couldn't get out of the saddle. So it was a long day, and I had to stop multiple times and realign the chain back to the cog that it was supposed to be on, because it didn't take much more than a bump in the road, really, to get the chain to bump and slap like that. And once it bumped and slapped, it would immediately ride up onto the next cog, which was not going to work because there wasn't enough chain to do that. So there are things you can do to resolve the problems that you have. The best thing, though, is you've got an old road bike, old steel road bike, here we go, that has horizontal dropouts. Horizontal dropouts are exactly as they sound. They go on the horizon. They go back and forth. They don't go up and down. And the old horizontal dropouts, you can actually get the chain tension exactly right, so you don't have the problem with the chain slop and the bouncing and all that other stuff that causes your chain to want to ride up onto the next cog. So again, Pedal and Ron's high opinion on good old steel road bikes. Gosh, they're great. They're just great. They just have so many aspects of serviceability that, especially in a pinch, that you can MacGyver them into anything you need to when you need to. So it's kind of a cool thing. So that's what you do. Now, how do you learn how to do all this? Oh, go to YouTube. You know, what can I say? There's tons of videos out there. There's people who show you exactly how to do it. They'll talk all about their incident and what happened to them. And, you know, it's not a... If you have some basic mechanical knowledge, you can do it. If you can put a new chain on your bike, you can do it. Okay, that's the key point here. And you're going to need a 5mm or a 6mm or even a 4mm Allen wrench. You're also going to need a chain tool. And then, of course, that quick link is like super helpful. I keep a couple of different sizes in my seat bag just in case someone on my ride has a problem, and then we find out whether they had a, you know, 9-speed, 10-speed, or 11-speed, because there's so many varieties out there. And then I use, you know, the appropriate link to do that, and I have them labeled. You know, you learn a lot along the way, and you figure it all out. So that's kind of what you do in this situation. And then what do you do with your old derailleur? Well, if you don't like your jersey a whole lot, then you can always put it in the back pocket. And your jersey will be covered in grease, and you'll have to do some serious degreasing before you wash it, because it will make a mess. So you can always bring it back that way. Yeah, you could toss it out to the side of the road, but that's littering. That's not really a great idea. And otherwise, you know, if you've got a bag big enough to put it in, well, congratulations, you're riding with a touring bike and you got a ton of room. But I don't carry bags that big on my bike. I carry like bare essential type bags on my bike to do that. So that's basically what you do. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this. The rear derailleur wire, okay? That's another thing. So you've got two different options here. One is you have mechanical transmission of yesteryear and still on most all of Ron's bikes, or you have electronic transmission, which is a wire, and you have to unplug it, and now it's dangling, okay? Or the cable is dangling. What do I do with this cable? There's a couple things you can do with a cable which are helpful. You pull the cable out of the housing that goes into the rear derailleur, and then you take that cable and you wind it around one of the seat stays. Now, I don't use the chain stay in this one. I use the seat stay. And then somehow knot it up at the top so that it won't come unwound, and now it's out of your way. And now you don't have to worry about it. With the electronic cable, it's maybe a little bit trickier, but again, there are some essentials you can carry in your seat bag, like a very, very small piece of duct tape or electrical tape that is just wound around something in your seat bag. Comes in really handy at certain times. And then you could just tape it onto that stay, and then you don't have a problem with it flopping around and getting destroyed, and then you have to replace the entire thing. And you know, the best way to do it is just to tape it, and that will keep it out of your way and make it so you can continue your ride. So that's one thing I forgot to mention. But you don't want that wire to get caught anywhere, so you've got to figure out a way to get things out of the way and secured so that they don't fall down later on in your ride and then run you into a problem. So anyway, that's my words of wisdom to you about this. The real tricky part about it is selecting the right gear to ride home in, and once you do, you can pretty much ride up most hills without too much difficulty. Yeah, it'll be more difficult because you don't have a choice, but you can do it, and you'd be really surprised. I mean, I've got a single-speed bike that I can ride around in a lot of places. I got a couple of hills that it's not acceptable on, but, you know, if I have to suck it up and go for it, I can do it. It's only once, and then you're over it, and then you're done. So, you know, that's a good thing. So that's what you do when you run into the broken chain, broken derailleur problem on your bike. And you know, there is one other thing you can do. There is one other thing. Oh, well, a couple of other things you can do. If you are a AAA card holder, you can call AAA and they'll pick you up and they'll take you home. For real. They're doing it now. It's probably not something they do all the time, but they will pick you up and bring you home if you are paying for a AAA membership. I don't know what level membership that is, but that is a possibility. Hey, you could call an Uber. Yeah, you know, hopefully you have a cell phone. Now, that's like, everybody's kind of got a cell phone. That's the most important tool / weapon I carry on my bike. So it's like a really, really important thing. But you could call that, or you could just suck it up and call home. And if you're in a situation where your significant other is toe-tapping at home and not real happy about the fact that you blew her or him off on a perfectly beautiful Saturday morning to go for a bike ride, then you're just going to have to deal with that. That's called a relationship. Oops. Okay, you'll deal with it. At least you're alive and you're safe. And that's what you have to reassure them is, I'm healthy, I'm alive, and I'm safe. That's good. Okay. I'm not getting into, you know, relationship counseling here. It gets real tricky. I watched a lot of activity around my bike shop that had to do with that, and certain members of the relationship riding away from certain other members of the relationship, and it gets sticky. But anyway, we won't go there. That's it. That's what you do when you run into a problem with your rear derailleur and or chain on your bike. Whew, lot to talk about there. Let's move on to a few other things and get right on into the show. I talked a little bit more about the Natchog Epic. You know, it's March in Connecticut. You never know what you're going to get. Now, Richard had almost 800 people signed up for that ride. I'm not sure that many people showed up for it, because I'm sure some folks just looked out the window and looked at the temperature and went, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it, which is unfortunate. But, you know, it's a decision that you want to make, and making smart decisions sometimes is the right answer. I unfortunately was forced into a smart decision on that day, and you know, I chose to not ride because of the issues I was having with the severe leg pain and cramps and accelerated breathing and all sorts of fun stuff that I'm dealing with right now. So I'm gonna move on from the Natchog Epic, which we have talked about a little bit earlier. So, you know, we got some stuff in there. Just a huge shout out to Richard Fries and the event, and what a great event. It's just really well run, and Richard makes a killer breakfast casserole, by the way. Awesome. It's really, really good. That was one of the favorite parts of my day, was that breakfast casserole. He feeds it to the staff. He takes care of his staff. He's a good guy. So anyway, and remember, Domestique Sports, that's who this is that puts on this event. And that's Richard's company, whatever it is that he works with. They are putting on another one in the fall in Lime Rock Park, just like last year, and there will be a Lime Rock Epic ride too, which is also a gravel associated ride. So lots of gravel roads mixed in with some paved roads. Beautiful northwestern Connecticut, just like beautiful northeastern Connecticut. Very rural, just really classic, beautiful places to ride a bicycle. So coming soon, we'll talk about that another time as we get closer to the event. So I want to go on to the effects of statins and cholesterol reduction drugs on exercise and physical activity. So let me start this out with, first of all, I'm sharing personal information and observations in an attempt to resolve a medical situation that I'm currently experiencing. As you know, if you've been listening to this show for the last 3 years, I had a quadruple bypass 2 years and 11 months ago, and after having an inability to breathe when climbing a short hill on my bicycle. Here's the good news. I ride my bicycle enough, and I know a lot of my listeners out there do the same thing, that you got a pretty good feel on what your body feels like when it's feeling good and when you're feeling good. And when you start to detect something that's not quite right, please, and I emphasize, please go see somebody about it. Okay, the information I am to discuss should not in any way be construed as medical advice. This is just an open discussion to draw listeners with similar experiences or cardiovascular risks into sharing information and conclusions. Please, if you are having any issues, call your doctor immediately or go to your emergency room for observation and professional help. That's my disclaimer. Now, after bypass surgery and full recovery, recovery. My cardiologist had decided to put me onto statins, and I was on a lot of other things too, which I eventually got weaned off of because of general discomfort, performance issues, etc. But you know, they're trying to keep your heart calm after you've had a very traumatic event when they crack your chest open, they go inside and they work on your heart and they put you back together again. There's a lot of trauma there, and there's a lot of healing that has to be done after that event happens. So I went through all of that, and the first level of concern was they would not let me get on my bicycle for 6 weeks. Seems kind of short now as I look back at it. 6 weeks, that's it, really? The reason they didn't want me on my bike in 6 weeks was because they wanted the bones to heal where they had cracked my chest open, so that if I did fall, I wouldn't then open everything up again and start all over again with a major emergency situation. So that made sense. That made a lot of sense. So, I basically did a lot of walking, and I did a lot of walking, and I was already very fit before I got into the situation, so I had some cardiovascular base and I didn't want to lose it, so I just walked. I walked a lot, and that was a big, big help. But then as we move further down the road, I am at cardiovascular risk because I've got cholesterol in my system, which is assumed at this point has put me into the situation that I was in with two 98% clogged arteries and two 80% clogged arteries. And so we moved on to something called statins, which statins are drugs that are used to lower your cholesterol, to hopefully increase your HDL and lower your LDLs. But really, we're looking at lowering the LDLs because that's the bad, what they call the bad cholesterol. Now, I'm already eating pretty darn good. We eat very healthfully here. We eat a lot of dark leafy greens. We walk the walk, talk the talk. Fran and I are that. This is what we do. She is a naturopathic physician, and she is always coaching her clients, patients into a better lifestyle. And we also try to live that better lifestyle, which includes riding our bikes. That's why the last few years for both of us has been a little frustrating because of issues that we're dealing with. But anyway, so it started with statins, and I was taking the statins and I just didn't feel right, didn't feel good. And eventually it got to a point where I could not get my heart up over 80% of max without my legs fatiguing first. And that was a big red flag to me. And what do I mean by fatiguing first? I mean like severe aches and pains. I'm talking about joint issues, all sorts of just really things that I would only truly experience if I was out riding my bicycle like 100 miles after not riding my bike at all. And experiencing the damage that I had done to myself at that point, that's what it felt like every time I got on my bike. That's not good. That's not good at all. So I had a discussion with my cardiologist about it. He kept reducing the dosages. We kept trying that. And then finally, one day, I just stopped taking them. I stopped taking them for a full 2-week period of time. And these are a daily dose. So that was pretty quick to get most of the medication out of my system. And in 2 weeks period of time, I felt like a new man. I was able to just jam up hills that, I had been held back on. I was getting my heart rate up over 90% without being fearful of it. Over 80% was kind of a norm on a hill because we're hilly out here, and that's all we do is climb hills. There's a lot of hills. But I got to a point where I almost hit my maximum heart rate on a ride, and I didn't feel bad for it. And so I called my cardiologist and told him. He said, stop taking them. Don't do it anymore. I have a new idea. But he said, I'm still very concerned about your cholesterol. I have a new idea. So he put me on a PCSK9 inhibitor, okay? And it's called, the drug company that makes it is called Amgen, and it's called Repatha. That's their brand. It's very expensive, and you have to inject yourself with it every couple of weeks, which I was doing pretty regularly for the last 6 months. And, you know, it worked. And I could still do what I needed to do cardiovascularly. I could get out. I could perform on my bike. I was riding my bike to work at the community center, which is almost 800 feet of climbing in 8 miles. You can do the math. It's an uphill challenge. And then I was teaching a spin class, and I was riding back home. I was doing that all summer, last summer. No problem at all. Everything was working great. And I'm like, this is good. I go see my cardiologist. My levels are still elevated, but coming down. So he's real happy. And he's like, you know, if anything comes up, give me a call. But he said, you're good to go for a year, he said, and then we'll talk about it again. Well, I went to my PCP because I was starting to feel, well, two things. I had an annual exam, and then I was starting to feel a little wrong in so many ways. I couldn't climb a set of stairs without gasping for air, and just massive amounts of pain in the legs. And he said, call your cardiologist, but he said, stop with the statins. Not the statins, the Repatha. And so I did, and I talked to the pharmacist to check and see if maybe there was some sort of a change in the formula or the distribution of the product, and no, everything was the same. And he said the same thing, call your cardiologist and stop taking it. So that's where I'm at. I'm 4 weeks out now, maybe 3.5 more like by the time my next dosage had to happen. So I don't feel good. Things are not right, and I will be talking to my cardiologist in a few days, and we're gonna try to resolve this, because I don't want to change my lifestyle. I want to continue to ride my bike. I want to continue to ride my bike and feel like a human being when I'm doing it, and I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet, so to speak. Bikes are who I am, and that's, so I'm gonna work on it. My full profile of my cholesterol at the last check, which was within the last month, I'm down to 150 for the number, which is crazy low, and 59 for the LDL, which is also crazy low. But the standards keep getting lowered, and the reason the standards keep getting lower is because the pharmaceutical companies keep putting the pressure on to lower the standards. Are we starting to see a magical catch here? A little problem here? By the way, if you want to hear more about this and you are interested, and this has caught your attention in any way, you will. I'm going to hopefully be able to post Fran's yesterday's Radio Naturopath program on to my YouTube channel, but I will also put a posting over on the Bicycle Talk page, and you can listen to a discussion that Fran and I had. I am not a doctor. She is a doctor. And it was a very informative piece about effects of various things and things that you can do, that you can take, which I am taking lots of natural medicines right now. I'm eating a couple of avocados a day. I'm doing essential fatty acids are like a huge thing for helping control your cholesterol. There are a lot of things to experience that can help you resolve this without the pharmaceutical industry being involved. So I'm not a doctor. I am not giving you advice. I'm just reflecting my experiences. That's all I'm doing here. So I want you to please use your best judgment in this situation. If you're having a problem, please just call a doctor, go to the emergency room, whatever you need to do. But anyway, if you listen to that show, you will hear a whole lot more about that. So as I do more and more research on this and I drive myself a little crazy, I go to places like PubMed or WebMD or any of those, which I know all the doctors just hate these places. But there's, you know, you Google and you try to find out what's going on with you because you're kind of concerned, and muscle-related adverse events associated with PCSK9 inhibitors in a veteran population. So they had surveyed this veteran population. I think it was like 167 people here, I believe is what it was. And 137 veterans, 24 patients, 17.5% developed a muscle-related AE while on the PCSK9 inhibitor. In predefined subgroups, studied statin intolerance ranged from 68% to 100%. Ezetimibe intolerance ranged from 41% to 83%. Both statin and ezetimibe intolerance ranged between 36% and 83%. That's what I was on before I went to the PCSK9 inhibitor. And in the study, the muscle-related inhibitor occurred at a similar incidence rate to that reported in previous clinical trials, exceeded the incident rate reported in the prescribing information for what I'm on, basically. It appears that patients who have prior muscle-related intolerance to a statin and or ezetimibe have higher likelihood of developing muscle-related AE to the PCSK9. And that's where I'm at right now. And it is disabling. That's how bad it is at this point. And I'm not super happy, and we're going to work on it. We're going to figure it out. We're going to get to the bottom of it. I will continue to report this on Bicycle Talk. I'm sure Fran will continue to report it on Radio Naturopath. We're going to find a solution to this problem, because Ron not riding his bike is not the answer. Not the answer at all. So we're going to do what we got to do. And let me reinstate this comment. It doesn't happen to everyone. Everyone is a little different, and everyone will have different effects in different ways. Some people will have no effects at all. I ride with people that are on high-level statins right now, and they don't have any trouble at all. And they look at me and go, God, that's weird. I never had any trouble with these things. You know, we're all different. But if you had had statin issues, and then you have problems with this inhibitor, it's not unusual. So anyway, the more I research, the more I see, the more I drive myself nuts. So we'll try not to drive myself nuts any longer here. And how are we doing for time? Oh boy, we're running completely out of time. And I got to just buzz forward here, because there's a couple things we need to take a quick look at. And last week I reported that Peter Sagan was to undergo heart surgery, his second heart surgery for an arrhythmia, because he hit an unprecedented 200 beats per minute during a recent mountain bike race. And the last report I just got this morning when I looked at this, which was about 3 or 4 days old, is Peter Sagan expects to return to training 15 days after his second cardiac incident. Yeah. All right. He's back. He's back. This is through the Global Cycling Network. He's going to give it a shot after a 15-day rest period and additional necessary assessments. Peter will be able to resume training. That's what the message on the Instagram said. So, though it may not be completely derailing his training, Sagan's various setbacks do not bode well for his goals of qualifying for the Paris Olympics mountain bike race, for which he was to score a large haul of UCI points in the mountain bike races to secure a spot on the start line. So, there's other statements. He says, I want to finish with mountain biking and finally enjoy something in cycling. He's not finished a race since being fitted with the cardiac recording device, and it's not yet clear whether he will return to racing. So, our shout out and understanding to Peter and what he's going through. I can't imagine. I mean, he's a professional cyclist. This is what he does. And so it's got to be a little bit tough. There's, again, more things that I could be talking about today, but I am completely running out of time. So I'm going to move on to, where's that results page? Here it is here. Over the weekend, it was the Gent-Wevelgem, and the women's race, Loriana Wiebes beat Elisa Balsamo in a sprint photo finish. Very exciting race. If you got a chance to see it or any of the quick videos to go along with it, it's so, totally cool. It's a head-to-head sprint battle. Ends in Cobble Classic. And, of course, we're in the Cobble races, and we're in the Classics right now. And then for the men, Mads Pedersen outpaced Matthew Vanderpoel in a two-up sprint. Again, another two-man battle decided in the race as they ride the last 35 kilometers to the end and ends in a sprint finish. Good stuff out there. There's all sorts of good stuff. I, of course, missed a lot of this until I finally sat down yesterday and looked at some of it because I was away working an event last weekend. And at the Volta a Catalunya, Pagacha completes domination with the Stage 7 win. I don't know what's in that guy's water, but something amazing with him. He is just outstanding this year. Moving on, we go on to our event section here because we've run out of time. Handmade Bicycle Show is going to have an Australian event this year in June 29th and 28th and 29th at the Darebin International Sports Center. If you ever get to go in one of these handmade shows, they're very, very cool. And then, of course, the second made show will be in Portland, Oregon, and that will be August 23rd through the 25th. The Natjog Epic is behind us, but a big, great memory. Just a great memory. What a great event. Remember, go to domesticeevents.com because coming this fall will be the Lime Rock Epic. If you missed it and you want to involve yourself in one of these. So, the Ride of Silence is May 15th, rain or shine, 7 p.m. sharp rollout. Recommended to get there at least a half an hour early to sign in. 10 South Eagleville Road in Storrs, Mansfield, Connecticut, right up next to the University of Connecticut. Overflow parking will be next door, E.O. Smith High School parking lot. All cyclists are welcome. It's a 3.5-mile loop through UConn campus, escorted and monitored by the UConn Police Department. Maximum speed is 10 to 12 miles an hour. Helmets are required. It is a very kid-friendly event, and we will be protected by the University Police Department. Join us for the ride of Ride the East on June 8th, 2024. That's Saturday, June 8th at Gilson House Museum, 627 Main Street in Willimantic, Connecticut. Explore the scenic airline trail with the East Coast Greenway Alliance and Trust for Public Land. You can select from two out and back options, a 48 mile and an 18 mile on the stone dust of the airline trail park. Both rides include short on-road loops to Mono Pond to learn about the Trust for Public Lands efforts to acquire land for public use. The 48-mile ride continues to the Cranberry Bog in East Hampton, where riders will learn about the 111-mile Central Connecticut Loop Trail, which will extend from East Hampton. This ride is presented by the East Coast Greenway Alliance, Trust for Public Land, and sponsored by the Gilson House Museum and the Wyndham Regional Chamber of Commerce. Very cool. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series coming this fall. Stay tuned. Mansfield Hollow will be a part of that this year, as well as a number of other races. Can't wait. Should be a lot of fun. Finishing points. Go Huskies. I can't help it. I live here. Natjog Epic. Were you there? What a day. Classic. You know, just good stuff. Classic New England conditions prevailed. At least the sun was out. Anyone out there dealing with heart issues and still riding your bike? Please, if you are comfortable, feel free to share your experiences. Hey, ever get stranded on that bike and have to resort to MacGyvering your bike? You can you share that with me too. We do love the listener comments. Keep them coming. So it's 2024. More miles, ride to commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bicycle rides and taking more in by slowing down and smelling the roses. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day and park that car or truck. Ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, Dr. Fran Storch. She'll be back next week. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment below. Or send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen, to past episodes on iTunes, Spotify, whus.org. Let us know. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. Thanks so much for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!